Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2015. Lecture 1, delivered on January 13, 2015. The title of this lecture is Introduction to the Discipline.
Today, Introduction to the Discipline. The first thing that I am going to do is wade into you 200 or so students and ask you a question. A simple question. You, what is business?
It is people coming together.
People. Okay, people. Has to be more than one person?
No.
So it could be one or more people. Okay, keep going. I'm going to cut you down and humiliate you a little more before I release you.
One or more people coming together to...
To trade goods and services.
Trade goods and services. Well, that's one kind of business, trading back and forth. Yeah. Is there something more fundamental, though, in business than just trading goods and services?
Like sell, or like provide a service?
Provide a service, sell, is it a service, or can that also be goods? Okay, goods or services. Madam,
Yes? What
say you? We've got one or more people coming together, fancy way to say that, one or more people in an organized fashion or in an organized manner doing what?
Well, I was going to say selling.
Selling. Okay. Well, selling, do you have to have something to sell?
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you get something to sell?
Market it.
Market it? Well, how do you get something to sell, though?
Buy it.
You, no one makes something?
You can make it.
Okay. Okay. See, I'm trying to refine the thinking here a little bit. Okay. Just sharpen it up. Consider yourself a pencil. You're a good pencil, but it's a little bit not sharp on the end, and we want to be able to make it sharper. Okay. That was a creepy-ass analogy. Okay. Okay. We're working on having something. Where does that come from?
Producing and manufacturing.
How do you produce it? Where does it come from?
Depends on the product.
Depends on the product. You are right about that. In general, what you are doing is you, in business, we're converting. What the hell are you doing in here? Anyway, I thought I killed you. No, seriously, what happened in that car? Did you live when I threw you out? Anyway, we take raw resources and we apply a technology to those raw resources. The technology is applied through factors of production. Factors of production. So in other words, a business is one or more people in an organized manner. It doesn't have to be a corporation, but it has to be organized in some way. Taking raw resources and using factors of production that apply technology to create an output. Now, that could raw resources could just be ideas, or it could be iron ore, or it could be plastics. But there's some kind of a raw resource that is pulled in. It could be physical, it could be intangible. And then some kind of technology is applied to it by factors of production. And there's an output. It could be a good or a service. But remember, there are very few goods that are nothing but a physical thing. Almost all goods, especially anymore, have some service halo around them. There can be pure services, but almost never a pure good. But anyway, now understand an important idea there. Technology. You hear all the time about technology. That word is used so narrowly that it really cripples you as a business person unless you understand it more broadly. You hear this word, technology in your home, technology in the classroom, technology in your ass. No. That is just one tiny, tiny technology of the modern era. We are always and always have been and always will be using technologies. Technology is merely how you deploy factors of production to create output. That's technology. There was a technology for making stone spearheads. There was a technology for making matches. There was a technology for creating political society. Everything has a technology that is being deployed. Over time, that technology could change. Who looks like a good victim? You. You are a bread maker. You make bread. You're the only bread maker in town. Everyone has to come to you for bread. Okay? Well, that means that they are completely at your whim. You can charge, pass through costs, and really screw them. But you don't care. You're making bread. You try to put flour into the bread thing, and oops, missed. Guess I'll have to charge more for that loaf. You hire your lazy-ass brother here who sits in the basement eating Cheetos and playing World of Warcraft. Really? World of Warcraft? Not even Call of Duty? Do you even lift? Okay. But look at what you are. You are the apex bread maker, and you don't care. You can charge whatever you want. Waste resources. They're your resources. You can waste them as you wish. You can just pass the cost along. But something interesting will happen along the way somewhere. Have you ever seen someone who deserved not to have the money he had? Bill Gates comes to mind. He deserves a swirly. He always did, and he never got it. You know, there are these people in this world who shouldn't have all the money they have. Wouldn't you do better with that money?
Easily.
Obviously, of course. But you see, he's the bread maker. But all you'd have to do is make the bread and not waste the resources, and you could charge a lower price because you had lower cost structure. That's all you'd have to do. So if you don't do it, someone is going to do it. And why? Because someone is a greedy son of a bitch who is going to say, I can do that, what he's doing, just not waste resources. I don't have to invent some new way of making bread. I just have to not use resources as wastefully. And I can take his business away from him. The use of an existing technology more efficiently on resources is called static efficiency. Static efficiency. The use of an existing technology with greater and greater efficiency in use of resources. Static efficiency. But that's not the end of the story. That's not the end. You, madam. He's making money. He's driving around in a car. He's got a girl. I mean, girl, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Bro. Yeah. Okay. I got to be sensitive, okay? It's a new era. I can't. They don't even let me kill people anymore. Jeez, you know, really. He's got money. Suddenly it occurs to you, you were looking at a shop. I could hire fewer people and use a better machine. Or maybe I could use more people and not use that stupid expensive machine. Or I could rearrange the layout of the production platform. And it could work faster, more efficiently, and I would save money, and I could pass that along to customers. When you change the technology to create more resource use efficiency, that's called dynamic efficiency. Dynamic efficiency, changing the technology by which factors of production are brought to bear on resources for output. Dynamic efficiency, changing the technology by which the factors of production are deployed on resources to create output. Notice in this whole model, you did not make that bread. You did not make that bread. And you did not make that bread. because you love people. You want them to have a nutritious meal. You didn't care about them and what they had did with their money as long as they spent it on your product. In other words, our capitalist system is driven by greed. Greed is not a shameful thing in our system. You were doing what you did to take his customers away from him. You were doing what you did to take his customers away from him. You were going to drive him out of business, put him into bankruptcy, so their kids had to go to Illinois State University. Oh, geez, God, I'm podcasting this. Okay. You understand? Greed is not an evil to us. Greed is what gives us life. And it has always done that. We're animals. Greed for life. Greed for love. Greed for food and toys. Greed for sex. You like sex? Man card issued. Okay. Ma'am. You understand what we're talking about here. Don't be ashamed of what we are. We are driven in our markets, in our production, in our decision-making in business, in finance, in marketing, in production management, in human resources. We are driven by a fundamental need of the human, which is to achieve, to take, to become more, and to have the things that we want in life. I've got two grades left, an A and an F, and you're the only two students that I have left to put a grade on. I see you first. Which one do you want? You greedy son of a bitch. That's exactly right. You're going to take it. No, I don't. I want that AI. I want him to have it like hell you do. Okay. Now understand that this isn't the story's end. You're greedy, but there is something about greed that's also special. You've got your Apex bread maker now. You put a sign over your shop. My bread tastes like ass. Mom tries to take her boy. Oh, mommy, I don't want to go in there. That bread tastes like ass. Oh, shut up. There are kids starving in China who'd love to have an ass sandwich right about now. You're not going to sell ass bread. Okay, niche market, Chicago, South Side, whatever. Okay, look. The thing is that you can't sell ass bread. There's a stop. Why not? You would if you could, but people don't want butt breath. And they're not going to buy it. They'll go back to him. Well, his bread, it kind of tastes, but not real. Not that total ass taste. You see, greed drives us to not just efficiency, but to satisfy our market, to feed what people say, and understand that about subjects in the discipline of economics. And finance is a subdiscipline of economics. What people say is not what they do. The desired is not the desirable. You can have people bitch all day long about fossil fuels ruining Mother Earth, but they still drive their gas-powered cars. They still buy the products produced in the engines that are of production, the factories that are fueled by coal, nukes, and oil, hydrocarbon products. The reality is that they want what we sell, but we have to give it to them in the way that they want. Sure, we're going to tell them we care about you. Sure, we're going to tell them that we are doing this for you, for Mother Earth, for your children's future. We're going to say that, but that's not why we're doing it. We're doing it so that we can make money. And that's the reality. It's a predatory world out there. As they used to say in my combat battalion, put your head down and hang your fangs out. And I'm going to teach you that. You've got to assume that these markets, especially finance markets, are driven by an animal instinct. And it's like an ocean. You're not going to beat that herd. You will hear about these people, I beat the market. Like hell you did. For everyone who gets lucky like that, there are a million who don't. Now, Financial News Network will bring on some day trader. Well, this guy, he really knew how to beat the market. Isn't he a genius? Ha ha. Follow his plan and you too can be a genius. They're not going to bring on the million people who were doing it at the same time who were completely wiped out. We have today another loser in on our show. How did you become a loser? I did everything right and I still lost my shirt. Yes. You see, we have this bias that makes it look like there are tricks and games that you can play, secrets of the finance world, that you can get ahead of the crowd. No, trust me. These markets, these global markets, are vast oceans of millions of players with streams of information pouring at them, night and day, 24/7. The clockers of the world is going around and these people are up all the time. Supercomputers. There is even a company now that can look in the future, a few microseconds, and beat you to any trade that would be worth you doing. Yes, it's real. It happens. It has different names, this new age does. But if you think you're going to beat the market that way, I'll teach you the technicals. I do want to teach you technical analysis. Look at the financial statements, read the numbers and all that kind of stuff, and see what you can see in them. But beyond that, if you're going to have any chance at all of getting ahead, you're going to have to go beyond numbers. You're going to have to think. Finance is the philosophizing kind of part of the business world. Your book says that finance is a combination of economics and accounting. That's bullshit. We use accounting numbers, but we know that accounting numbers really don't tell us anything much that we actually need to know to make intelligent decisions in finance. First of all, and this is no criticism of accounting. Hell, they make a lot more money. They're more likely to get jobs right out of college than finance people are. But look, finance is rule-based. You are using direct cost receipts, historical costs, sunk costs. Those don't matter to us at all in finance. In fact, one of the largest costs that drives actual decision-making is not part of accounting. It's nowhere in your accounting statements. But we in finance have to understand this cost. You should have learned this in economics, but since you didn't have me as your economics prof, you probably didn't have the best, but you know, we'll live with it. That cost is called opportunity cost. You know what opportunity cost is?
Yes.
Work it, boy.
Okay,
that's actually not bad. Give him a pat on the buttock. No. You were going to squeeze, weren't you? I know that. Oh, yeah. Stop that. Okay, look, you're almost there. Opportunity cost is the cost of the best foregone alternative. In other words, accounting deals with the money that goes out of your pocket. In economics and finance, we have to think about a much more important thing, the money that doesn't come into your pocket. Woman, you came out of my finance class. You decided to major in finance. You were so inspired by what was happening here. And we work with you, get you a good grade point averaging. There you are, about to graduate. We know that we have made the arrangements. You did great with interviews, and you've got a job at State Barn. It's a $60,000 a year job, and we are so proud of you. You know, we're wiping tears out of our eyes, sitting there in the faculty processional while you're getting your degree, and off you go. Oh God, it makes my heart warm and my pants damp. Okay, so, shut up. I'm doing a story here, damn it. Okay. 2 years later, you show up at my office door. Oh, my God. Oh, you're at State Bar. I'll bet you've really risen in the ranks here. Tell me all about how great it is. Professor C, I left that graduation ceremony, and I didn't go to the job. Wait, what? I wanted to live my dream, Professor C. What the hell was your dream? I wanted to open my own donut shop. Wait, what? And I came to tell you I just got my first full year's financial statements, and at the bottom line, I made a profit of $20,000. A profit. What do you think of me, Professor C? You know what I'm going to tell you? You are a dumbass. You lost $40,000. You didn't make $20,000. You lost $40,000. Because you gave up $60,000 to make $20,000. You done really wronged yourself. Burn that donut shop to the ground. Well, bring me the donuts first. Let's not get radical here. Do you understand opportunity cost? It drives our decision making. You go to two stores. You are making $50 an hour in your job. You're making $10 an hour as the assistant manager at the Jiffy Lube on the south side of Memphis. Okay. Now, you can go to Walmart and buy a cart of groceries for a much lower price than you can at some fancy hoity-toity store like Schnucks here in town or something like that. Okay? But you see, here's the thing. Have you ever been to Walmart? No. First of all, you have to find parking in another county. And then you have to walk through the parking lot. You almost get run over by some prairie hillbilly driving a truck that says, "My wife, yes, my dog, maybe, my gun, never." And then you go in. And then you go in. You're trying to walk down the aisles, and there is this big woman right in the middle of the aisle. "Honey, what do you want for dinner?" "Get out of the way, you cow." But even before you go in, you walk through the door. "Hi, welcome to Walmart." You look around. Oh, God, they're hiring midgets now. Jesus. You find this stuff on acres of aisles. You run around, and you finally get up to the cash register, and there's a long line waiting. Sure enough, right in front of you is a shopping cart with some hag and her 13 kids, and the one in the cart is looking at you and clear up in the front of the line is an old woman who's trying to find change in her purse. "Oh, I know I've got some pennies. Let me get rid of all these pennies for this bill for you." "Oh, damn it, woman, will you go and eat? You're dying. You have one last meal. You're old." Look, you spend an extra 30 minutes at Walmart. You go into Schnucks, you can get your stuff, go right up and pay for it. No problem. 30 extra minutes at Walmart. What's 30 minutes cost you in opportunity? You were making $50 an hour. Costs you, as a $10 an hour person, only $5 for that 30 minutes. So you see, you're willing to pay as much as $20 more to go to a place like Schnucks. Why would anyone go to a store where the prices are so high? Well, it's obvious. People who have higher opportunity cost of time are going to go to more expensive stores. So you have to choose your customers. In my own business, when I'm at an arts festival, I price my stuff very high because I don't want the riffraff coming in. I want them to look at my prices and walk away. Because you know what happens if some of them are too stupid to understand. I don't want them. They're going to come in, "I got some pictures on my cell phone. Let me show you how great my stuff is." "Oh, God, no. Last summer, this guy, I got about 100 sunsets here. I got some of my girlfriend wants to see them." "Oh, man, God. Oh, Jesus." Don't do that. You see, if you want poor people to come to your store, low prices. But if you want to keep them out, high prices. That's opportunity cost in the real business life. You choose your target market with your pricing. And high prices, you're going to have high-priced customers, high-pay customers. Low prices, you're going to bring in a lower-class people. That's opportunity cost. It's not in the accounting numbers at all. It's not there. And yet it drives business decision-making. When I have to make a choice on where I put my prices. And also, with respect to things as simple, I had a wonderful example of another phenomenon, the sunk cost fallacy. One of my consulting jobs is just the perfect example of it. Many years back, it was a two-stage, three-stage, but simplified, it was a two-stage development of a product. And they had gone through the first stage, cost about 14, I can't even remember anymore, I'm just going to say $14 million. And we were at the point where we were making the decision on the second stage, which was $5 million. Going to cost a little south of $5 million. I know I've got the numbers somewhat wrong. Well, the mentality in that executive room was this. Well, we've already put $14 million into this project, so you know we got to keep going, spend that extra $5 million. That's exactly wrong thinking. Do you know where that $14 million was? No. It was with, yeah, go. It wasn't there. It was with Jesus. It was gone. It was there, up there in heaven. It's not with them anymore. The $14 million is irrelevant. The question is, will that $5 million give you the ROI that's worth $5 million versus doing something else with the $5 million? The $14 million is gone forever, and it has no impact on the decision-making of the business.
Okay.
It's 20 years from now. No, let's do 25. They've been a beautiful 25 years. You got married. You have a wonderful job. Everything is great. And every night you come home and you and your partner are just so happy. You dance, you play music, you light candles, you have dinner together, you laugh and talk about the wonderful day that you had. And every night it's just like this. 25 years of this. Okay? One night, after 25 years, you come in the front door and it's dark. Honey, I'm home! And all of a sudden, at the other end of the hallway, a shadowy figure jumps out. It is your significant other. She has a full automatic weapon. And she unloads. She nearly uncorks the whole magazine at you. You run out the door. You crawl to your car. She's screaming things in German to you. And you get to your car. You drive away, racing. There's gunfire behind you. Pung, ping, pong. You drive around. You're so confused. And then you turn on the radio. It's raining. And the music, they're playing your song with your partner. You are so beautiful to me. Tears are running down your eyes. I mean, she fired 20 rounds. That's less than one a year for those 25 years. Are you going to go back?
Probably not.
Probably not, dude. No! Damn! This is not a gray area. We don't care about history. History is dead. What we care about are the expectations for the future. That's what matters. The past is dead and buried. It might give us good indications about what's about to happen, clearly, but at the same time, in finance, we are about expected future events, expected future cash flows. Not what happened yesterday, but what is likely to happen probabilistically, expected values and all that stuff, tomorrow. And that's the way we have to be. And that makes our job a lot harder than an accountant's job, because we have to wear a wizard's hat and have a crystal ball. We sneak the peeks into the past and hope that that tells us something about the future. But at the same time, we also have to understand that the future is never going to replicate the past. Because if it did, people would take advantage of it and exploit that pattern. And then it would change the future outcome. So when you have someone who says, I have a chart here that shows this stock is doing this right now, and so we're projecting it'll be up there. Horse crap. That can't work. Because if it did work, there would be traders who would have already put it up there because they know it was going to be up there. Expectations drive financial decision making, not the past. Sunk costs are dead and gone. We can't care about those. And accounting numbers, they are important to us, but they are not the end-all be-all. And we'll use accounting financial statements, but understand that they are looking into a future through a dark and flawed crystal ball. That's why in my classes, I expect you to begin to think independently. Don't think out your butt, but at the same time, begin to say, all right, yeah, we see what has been happening, but there's a point where that's not enough. If I have you do financial analysis for a Walmart, I want you to walk, not just to do the numbers on paper or on the computer screen, walk into the Walmart. Talk to the people. Look at the shelves. What do you see? Abundance or stock out? What do you see the workers doing? How do you see different competitors? Where are competitors deploying against Walmart? Using those kinds of predictions and also understanding something. People fail all the time in business. There's no question about that. But sometimes there's a magic, and there is this desperate drive to live and to keep going. That's business. Is that, yeah, I mean, I've had more corporations fail than Donald Trump. But at the same time, you learn and you have this hunger. And sometimes it works. A great example of that is just happening now. One of the companies that the analysts had written off was JCPenney. JCPenney, old people store, dying, can't get back from the dead. Well, son of a bitch, their Christmas sales knocked down the expectations of those precious analysts who had already started planning the funeral for JCPenney. Sometimes the magic is there, and you always have to have an eye out. Is this really something that could possibly happen? Understand that in business, and this is, I won't comment on your personal lives, but have any of you ever read, I don't know if they even do it in high school or in college now, Dante Alighieri's Inferno? You ever read? Okay, I'm sure you've heard this part. There's a sign over the gates of hell. It says, "Abandon all hope, ye who enter." Oh, well, that's the end of everything. Go through there. It's over forever. In fact, that's exactly what Dante hoped that the idiots would see. Because what that sign is actually telling you is exactly how to leave hell. You see, the gates are always open. You can leave. And that sign is telling you exactly how you leave. You abandon hope. You walk away from pretending that things are going to be better, and you do it. You make it happen for yourself. Dante said, all you have to do is stop hoping for a better world, a better you, a better life, all that, and make it happen. And then you can just walk right out anytime you want. So keep that in mind as in not just this class, but in all of your business classes and in your business lives. The first thing you stop doing is hoping. And you do. You analyze. You think. You act. You wake up in the morning and you say, go. And you don't stop until you have gotten the job done. Because if you don't do it, hell, someone's going to take your bread machines and make them better. Someone's going to take your sloppy operation and just clean it up. That's how it works in business, okay? So I am inviting you in this class to join me on that journey. First things first, finance is one of the majors here. It's one of the heavies, and there's a finance association. I'm a faculty advisor to it. If you want to join Illinois State Students in Finance, but you certainly don't have to be a finance major to learn from finance. There are a lot of other majors here that are absolutely outstanding in the College of Business, and we're one of the top 100 schools, so we give you the best we can, and then you can go out there and use it as you want, or you can hope that someone gives you a job. Here's the deal. If your finance is a broad subject, and it covers a lot of territory, one of the things that we face realistically is accounting competes with us. Accounting tries to sell itself to do the same things that we in finance do. And when they see those accounting people, you'll see these. It drives me crazy. You'll see finance position is open. And then somewhere in the explanation, they're giving all the things that a finance person does, and then they'll say accounting degree required. God, that irritates me. But we compete with the accounting people that way. And so that means that we just have to market ourselves. We have to make sure that people know we can do things that they can't do. For example, we can actually talk about the future. We have done the future. Like I said, there is a brokerage firm out there that is already reaching and touching the future. Just a little ways out there. It's absolute science fiction, but it's going on now. And also, though, with this comes a lot of other dangers. Go ahead.
Yeah, isn't that illegal, though? Like, not
front running. It's illegal as hell, but they don't call it front running because it's on computers. old style, old school. From my days, you were front running when you pulled this kind of nonsense. But yeah, they're doing it.
Are you talking about that thing that goes all the way from like Chicago to New York?
It's a high volume trading. It's not in Chicago. There's no way you're going to get one of the crucial elements is getting the servers so fast that they can jump the shark. And so you have to be real close to where the trade actually is going to execute so that you can pull the stunt. It's really wrong, but you know, who's to say who's wrong in a world where bad guys make a lot of money? So there you go. Here's the danger, though, is that, as I told you, I was writing articles in the mid-2000s warning that there was a financial crisis coming. I like Chicken Little, the sky is falling. And of course no one listened to me. I was, you're ugly, you've got a big nose, and you yell too much. But it did come. People don't realize how close we came to a global financial apocalypse. Maybe a couple of hours on a dark day in September of 2008, we were 2 hours, no more, from having the entire world's financial system come apart. And if it ever came apart, we couldn't put it back together. Imagine your paychecks, they were gone. Your ATM cards didn't work. You couldn't buy anything. And then the roads would begin to get filled with people with guns, and you would have an apocalyptic scene like out of a terrible movie, a frightening movie like The Road. It was a horrible, sad, miserable movie. I loved it. we dodged that bullet. Talked about reform. What was reform? It was, we're going to have these standards and these rules that we'll do. And of course, those rules that they did were going to make a monstrous nightmare for most financial institutions who were little. The big companies on Wall Street, well, they were going to be okay because they had literally floors full of suits, lawyers, and accountants to handle all these ridiculous rules. And of course, as the rules came biting down, the smaller houses began to fold up, and the regulators handed them off to bigger and bigger houses, consolidating the monsters at the top. Too big to fail, it's worse than that. Can't let them fail because they are now fully integrated into the government structures of the world. So the next time this happens, it's not going to be as easy to stop it. 2 hours, that was slamming the brakes on in a really hard way. This time, you probably won't be able to do it. But fortunately, it's not going to happen for a while, and I'll be dead, and it's your problem, Sparkies. Okay? But know that we are playing with fire in our world, especially in the world of finance, because we're the bad guys who create the derivatives and all those other evils that are making the system more and more unstable day by day, hour by hour. So, it's kind of cool though. Yeah, I know, right? Finance is divided up into several sub-disciplines. Let me give them to you real quick here. The one most people think about when they think about finance is investments. Investments, you know, buying and selling stocks and all that kind of stuff. The truth of the matter is that that is a brutal world. I owned a penny stock house. And I mean, I was at the very fringe of an unbelievably rough, challenging, mind-numbingly difficult world that's even worse, harder now. I mean, I did, you know, those exams you have to take, like the Series 7, those were, I mean, they were hard in my time, but they are a bear. Now, have you ever seen the movie Pursuit of Happiness, that Will Smith movie? True story. And, I mean, you remember how he would just study his butt off and all that? Yeah. And you're competing against all these other people to try to get one slot in one of these big brokerage houses, and they're smart as you are, so it's a dog-eat-dog world. Or you can go the boiler room route, and you're just put in a room literally with a pile of other people trying to buy and sell stock, trying to sell stock to suckers, trying to buy stock at a price that is lower than what you try to sell it at, having rich people dump their stock off on you and you got to make them happy, so you take it and you try to sell it to suckers, that kind of stuff, creating financial products to sell to other, to financial planners and all that kind of stuff. It is a rough world. And it's a changing world, too. The technological changes are just mind-numbing. I took my finance students up to the Chicago Board of Trade in Chicago. And most people, they all had this vision of that, you know, you see in the movies with the wild screaming and the throwing of papers and barking. Back from my era, what we call the open cry system. We had all these hand signals. We were all constantly changing and all this kind of stuff so that our competitors couldn't see what we were doing with our contract structures and our pricing and all that kind of stuff. And they all went up there, and we went into the pit. Vast, empty pit. No one was there except for a few people, traders, sitting in the bleachers, looking at their computers, watching porn or playing games. The only active pit was the options pit, and that's because options contracts are so complicated that the computers can't be programmed yet to deal with those complex contracts. But that was the only place anything was going on. The rest of it was like a ghost town. That's how it is now. It's all in computers, all places other than there on the floors of the exchanges. Now, there still are places that are crazy in New York City. No question about that. But it is becoming more and more a virtualized world. Okay, investments. That's the one most people think about when they think about finance. Far, far beyond that, another area is corporate finance. Corporate finance. You actually work inside of a company dealing with financial issues. You do project analysis. You decide, and I'll teach you this, a project up or down on a project, yes or no. And we don't equivocate. It's not, well, maybe. It's either yes or no. And I'll show you how we do it. Calculators can do it so easily anymore that it's almost fun to teach it because you can get to the point where you know how cool it is when you've got some marketing people who have gotten this great idea and they put it to you and you can be the asshole and say no. But we spent, and this is such a great idea. No, you don't get it. But no. You see, we get to do that. That's very cool, fun stuff. When the company we deal with in corporate finance, you deal with timing of cash flows, money coming in, money going out. Okay, we're going to have money coming in for, let's say, $4 million. And I'm giving you actually a real example of, from a discussion I had a while back. I was at a corporate dinner. $4 million came in. Now, they didn't have to pay a bill for about 3 weeks of $1.5 million. It was something like that. So they had $4 million to play with for a couple of weeks, and after that, they'd still have maybe $2.5 million to play with longer than that. But you can't just play with it. You got to be safe with it because this is the company's money. That's payroll and all that. So the finance people are the ones who know how to access markets, put money into quick investments, and that so that you can pull it out as you need it in an orderly fashion. That's corporate finance, making decisions on projects, finding markets for investing, finding markets for borrowing. Corporate finance. Okay, now, another aspect of finance is the, I'm talking about the ones here. Another area of finance that is its own major here is insurance. And I'm really not talking about State Barn agent selling home and life. Yeah, that's one side of insurance. That's called personal lines. The very cool side is not agency, it's brokering. You represent companies and all of their exposures, risk exposures, and you put together, you negotiate with the giant insurance companies and the reinsurers a package of insurance for them, based upon all the different risk exposures and all that kind of very extremely cool stuff. In that world, you can sit in an office and do all your work, or you might be one of the people who's literally walking around on a construction platform 10 stories up looking at the risk exposures, or standing on a barge going down the Illinois River and understanding the risks that are involved and how to price those risks for insurance purposes. That is commercial insurance. And there are so many different aspects. There's also even the whole life insurance aspect. Okay, that's insurance. Now, another one in finance is financial planning. Financial planning. You are working with people and with businesses sometimes to make sure that they can achieve, or at least get a good reassurance, that they can achieve their financial goals over their lives. Now, you're not going to work with Ma and Pa Kettle living in a trailer park. You're going to work with reasonably well-to-do people. We even call it wealth management now, and there's some. It is a big hot field. I mean, here in town, there are several companies that are hiring people, what we call front room people that work with the wealthy people, and then there are the back room people who design the products to make sure that, you know, the investments so that they can achieve their goals. Okay, someday you are going to have children. Well, you won't. I mean, that'd be really weird, ass. Yeah, but you'll be married, and there will be kids, and they'll call you daddy. God knows, if you had shown up at my door, I didn't expect, I had no idea. But anyway, you've got a plan for their college. You've got a plan for that second home. You've got a plan for maybe a boat or for some goal, I want to retire at 55. That's what financial planners do. And it's a whole world of its own, and we have a specialized program in financial planning here. Give you an idea of how serious this can get. If you go to one of my websites, and I don't know if I have these up at my main website, you'll see some pictures of Chicago. And they're kind of unusual pictures because they're looking down on Chicago from the middle of Chicago. Well, the story of that is that I took my students up there because we have some finance grads that are working on the 55th floor of the Chase Tower in Chicago on Monroe Street. And I was getting bored with it, so I went up on the roof where I wasn't supposed to be and took pictures. I almost got blown off the roof by a wind, but I got some damn nice pictures. But anyway, these guys, I was sitting there when they were introducing themselves and talking about what they were doing. And these guys at this, and I won't mention the name of the wealth management branch of this major company, but they said, yeah, you know, if you've got less than $30 million, we're really not interested in talking to you. So in other words, they start managing wealth for families at $30 million. Average, and one of them looked at the other one and said, what are we doing on average for our wealth, family wealth? Well, I think it's about $600 million right now. The average family wealth, they're managing their money, $600 mil. And they say, well, we handle everything. You know, they'll call us up. Well, our Uncle Joe, he just found out he's got cancer. Okay, we'll make sure that we get the best treatment, and we'll make sure that, you know, money's no object on that. Okay, my daughter, she just picked up with a biker. Okay, we'll take care of it. I don't know what the hell they meant by that, because it might have been me when I was riding my Harley. I can't remember that night. But anyway, look, they handle huge money. And that's wealth management. And they make very good money, too. So keep that in mind. It's a great place. If you want to work with very, very rich people, or at least reasonably wealthy people, financial planning is a great major. Now, other ones in the story, real estate finance. And I'm not talking about selling homes. I'm talking about commercial real estate. Dealing with shopping malls, enclosed and strip malls, office buildings, office parks, apartment complexes, that kind of stuff. That's real estate finance. That was one of my specializations, real estate and urban studies, among my other specializations. So you'll hear me talk about that one a few times in the class. Maybe we'll do a couple of analyses. Let's say we've got a strip mall we're looking at. Is the price of this mall worth it for us to buy it? How much are we going to make in rent? What's our occupancy rate? Do all the calculations and come up with a number. Okay, they're asking too much. Does that mean we walk away? No. We walk up to them and say, we want to buy this, but we're not going to pay that price for it. Okay, that's the kind of stuff we do in real estate finance. So let me make sure. I've got investments, corporate, financial planning, insurance, real estate. That covers about everything. And then there's some kind of bleed overs and spillovers in there. There's sub-disciplines like risk management in insurance. Very cool field. Takes years for you to get to the point where you can be a risk manager. Very fun stuff, though. Anyway, that is the span of the majors that are available in finance. Keep in mind, first of all, And just, I won't do this often, but there will be a quiz popping up for you to handle here in the next day or two. So keep it in mind. Okay. Finance is a subdiscipline of what subject?
Economics.
Okay. What is opportunity cost?
Cost of like the next best decision.
That you gave up.
Yeah.
The best foregone alternative. Very good. Okay. Give me one of the areas of specialization in finance.
Investments.
You're listening in class. I don't know why you're listening to me, but I can assure you that it will be very rare that I let you go early, but I'm going to do that today so that if you want to come up and say hello to me, you can. That's all I have for you. I thank you.